please don't waste any time on these meetings. You're right on the button.
I am desperately trying to be right on the button, Jim. Yes. All right. Looks like we're on.
Who is the radiant left, lower left?
That's our new board member, Kim Swanberg.
Okay. That's good to know.
All right. So can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. I believe we are on time to begin, Mr. Chairman. You're muted. Can't hear you, Mark.
My camera's not working. Can you hear me now?
It's kind of going in and out.
Can you hear me now?
You all hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. That's better.
Okay. I apologize. And I don't know why my camera went through. Fed up with it. Okay. Let me call the meeting. This is the Tucson Supplemental Retirement System Board of Trustees July 2025 meeting. Pete, would you please call the roll?
Give me just a second here.
I'm sorry.
I am having a little trouble with my computer. Wouldn't you know it? All right. Let me do it from memory. Mark Rubin.
Here.
Carl McFerrin.
Here.
John O'Hare.
Here.
Angel Ozamelum.
Here.
Kim Swanberg.
Here.
Dave Samer, I believe, is absent. He told us he wasn't going to be here. And Terry Train.
Here.
We have six of the seven members. We have a quorum.
Okay. Is it Angel? Did I pronounce your name right?
Good morning. No. It is Angel. For simplicity, I'll take Angel.
Okay. Would you like to briefly introduce yourself?
Certainly, certainly. Good morning, everyone. My name is Angel Ozamelum. I am the Business Services Director for the city. I have assigned in the past individuals to represent me or my position on the board, but I have chosen to be present at these meetings and be a part of part of the board.
Well, great. Welcome. We appreciate your being here and choosing to devote some of your time to us. Thank you. All right. Let's take up the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Thank you, John. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Has anybody seen anything or noted anything of concern? All right. If not, no discussion. Would you please call the vote, Pete?
All right. In reverse order. Terry Train.
Aye, yes.
I'm sorry, now I've lost my track. Kim Swanberg.
Aye, yes.
Angel Ozamelam.
Yes.
John O'Hare.
Aye.
Carlton Farron.
Aye.
And Mark Rubin.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0.
Thank you. All right, Pete, we have next item is a benefits policy review. Can you bring us up to speed on that?
Absolutely. So I sent out a memo, and the entire purpose of this is to make sure that the board, which has a bunch of new faces on it, is gaining information and understanding of how the pension system operates. So this is simply an informational piece, no action required. But I wanted to make sure that I take a few moments to go over the benefits which are provided to retirees as a result of their work in the system. And so it's a two-page memo. There are two tiers of membership within TSRS, and the two tiers are separated based on your hire date. The Tier 1 benefit plan includes a benefit plan which is based on your average high 3 years of pay, which is a fairly short amount of time. The benefit plan does not include anything associated with overtime, so it is strictly based on your base pay. The average pay for your high 3 years is multiplied by your service credits, which is roughly equivalent to the years of work that you have put in. And that is multiplied by 2.25%. So to put it in English, every year of work gives you 2.25% of your average salary as a lifetime benefit. That's the baseline of the pension benefits, which is a single lifetime. And when you retire on that day, the member, and if they have a beneficiary or a spouse, the spouse sits down and makes an election of what of the seven benefit options they want to choose as a survivorship. So you have a baseline benefit, which is a single lifetime benefit for a single member. There is an actuarial reduction for every type of survivor benefit which is offered, lowering those monthly payments in order to keep the net present value equivalent for the fund and pay benefits to a survivor, whether that's a lifetime survivor or whether that is a term of payments. So that's Tier 1. Tier 2 is substantially equivalent with a reduced benefit, and the smaller benefit package is centered around a couple of changes. One of them changes the 3-year horizon of average pay to a 5-year horizon. So the 5-year horizon tends to be a little flatter, moves slower, so things like pay raises don't have as much of an impact on your pension. And the factor that you get is no longer 2.25%, but 2%, which doesn't sound like a huge change, but it's a 10% change in the benefit calculation. So it is pretty significant and notable. There's a couple other changes in there. One of them is the eligibility criteria. Tier 1 is eligible upon reaching 80 points, and you get 1 point for every year of age, and you get 1 point for every year of work. So if you are 50 years old with 30 years of work in Tier 1, you have achieved 80 points and are eligible to retire at any time. Tier 2, move that up to 85 points. Same basic factors. You have age plus years of service, but now you have to get to 85. Tier 2 also added a minimum age so that you cannot retire at age 40, 45. You have to reach the minimum age before you can retire. Last item is the treatment of sick and vacation leave. For Tier 1 members, you gain the benefit of any accrued sick and vacation as if you had been paid out on every dollar, every hour for your sick and vacation. for Tier 2, none of those sick and vacation leave accruals apply to either the benefit calculation, so it's not service credit, and it does not apply to your eligibility calculation, so it doesn't bring you closer to 85 points.
So quick question on that, Pete.
Yeah.
So for the Tier 1 employees, when their vacation and sick leave is added, do they get the 3 months or 3 years of high consecutive highest paid, and then all of that is added to that, and then kind of divided by three again? Or how does that work?
Yes. The sick and vacation, because it counts as time worked, if it is the highest, your current rate of pay is your highest rate of pay, it counts as part of your average pay.
Okay.
So if you have a long-term employee who has 1,000 or 2,000 hours of sick time, plus a couple hundred hours of vacation time, and they get a raise, 1.5% happened in July. Their high three includes all of that sick time immediately recognized with the 1.5% change. So to get their high three, they add two more years of work, and now all three of them are at that 1.5% rate, at the advanced rate. So, yes, it immediately counts in towards that high, in that average of the high three. And there are a few employees who have sort of tentpole work histories where they did a temporary assignment or had moved around in the city and done things which had higher employment, higher rates. And the sick and vacation will never bring down their average. We will ignore it rather than bring it down.
Gotcha. So the sick and vacation basically enhances their last year of service. Is that kind of a right way of?
That's a fair way of saying.
And then sometimes that's one of the highest three and you, and it factors in.
Yes.
Okay.
You got it. Okay. That was my discussion item. If there are any other questions, I'll be happy to address anything the board has. Hearing none, thank you.
Hold on. I got to tell you, it sounds really complicated, and I'm guessing that for a lot of people, are there people on staff to help somebody understand their options?
Yes.
Okay.
So every time we do a couple of things. Every quarter, so every 3 months, we have a retirement seminar open to everyone who's a member. So we invite people in and we give them a discussion. You can attend as many times as you want. So as people are planning their retirement, they start showing up and showing up and showing up.
Yeah. Okay.
In addition, in order to actually go through the retirement process, you sit down and you have a one-on-one discussion with a member of my staff, and we are required by code, it's in code, that we describe all of the options in order to have them understood. And it actually says by the spouse. But we take
and
the member and the spouse.
And your staff shows up with a calculator so people can actually put real numbers. I'm serious. I'm not kidding. So people can put numbers to the formula and understand this is what I'm getting and this is what I'm giving up, and so on.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Had I thought of it, I would have put in some examples of what those projections look like. We worked with our actuarial firm so that there is a nice 2-page document which displays how we do the calculations and what the amounts are associated with each one of the individual selections a member could make.
All right. I ask in part because I am at an age where I collect Social Security, and for me it's a pretty simple matter because I'm not married and I don't have any of the unusual factors that take you into the morass. But for people who find themselves in the morass that is Social Security, it can be nigh on impossible to figure out what your options are and what factors affect them. So, and I was hearing a bit of that in your analysis, but I'm delighted to hear that we have real and serious opportunities for people to understand what's going on. Because it's a big issue for people. Yeah.
Those are great points. And we used to be very admiring of the Social Security system and the way that they could handle tens of millions of people. And now I am even more admiring of the people who are still there trying to manage tens of millions of people.
No kidding. No kidding. Okay. All right. Any other questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, Pete, could you just mention briefly how we have three contribution rates but two tiers of benefits?
Of course. So within Tier 1, there are two contribution rates. What you have in front of you is about the benefits. So it doesn't discuss the contribution rates going in. And it doesn't distinguish between the two different rates of within Tier 1. But Tier 1 membership, during times when the board was trying to evaluate how to manage the financial problems which had come up repeatedly and caused significant issues, there were some changes made to membership in the plan which related to your contribution rates. So the what we call the Tier 1 fixed category are those members who pay 5% as a fixed rate. It is not variable, and it is of their base pay. So their contribution is fixed at 5. There is a small period of time, I believe it was about 2 years, where employees who are hired during that time are under the variable plan. So this plan was designed to help split the cost and make it more affordable for the city and still maintain the kind of benefit. The changes, it was evaluated a couple of times, and there have been a couple of adjustments to it. As it currently stands, an employee pays half of the normal cost of the retirement benefit, rounded up to the nearest 0.25%. So that is currently recommended to be 7.25%. The mayor and council chose not to adopt that in their last budget. We have discussed that previously. So those of you who are new to the board may not know this, but that did come up. And so it came back to the board as this was action taken by mayor and council. And so that was a choice on their part. It is one of the, it will come back up again today a little later in our discussions. So if you are in Tier 1, a lot of the memberships are members in the 5% fixed rate. A few of them are in a variable rate, and the variable rate is calculated as half of the normal cost rounded up.
Some people are paying more for their benefit than others.
Yep.
Depending on when they were hired.
Yep.
Okay. All right. And so it goes. That's part of the deal.
And Tier 2 members all have a variable rate, which means that it is half of the normal cost of the benefit rounded up.
Mr. Chair, Pete, if I may ask, do you know roughly how many members are on that variable rate from Tier 1, roughly?
I'm going to say a number, but I probably shouldn't because I'm not looking at the numbers. I believe it's around 60.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any more questions, comments? All right. Next item, thank you for that, is a proposed update to the city code. Is that you, Pete, or you, Cassie?
Which do you prefer?
Coming from me, but it's really going to be Cassie.
Okay.
There is a memo. I put that together so you would have some information, some documentation around what we're proposing. And this is a minor cleanup item that came up and we had discussed with Cassie. And I will let Cassie describe the hard stuff.
Okay. So as most of you who are continuing members know, we've spent a tremendous amount of time reworking the disability provisions of the code. And there is a eligibility condition for disability that measures how much service you have, right? So you have to have a threshold amount of service to be eligible to apply for a disability retirement. And Pete and his staff flagged the fact that that rule that states the service requirement for disability did not specifically address how much credit is given for leave time, the sick and vacation time. And as Pete just described, the rules vary depending on whether you are Tier 1 or Tier 2. Tier 1 employees get credit for their leave time. Tier 2 do not. So what we're doing here is simply adding a specific cross-reference to the disability provision to pick up that different calculation rule for leave time that depends on the employee's tier. So we're not changing the rules, we're just making it clear that those the differences in leave credit do apply for disability eligibility as well as regular retirement.
Is this an action item or just information?
This is an action item because the board makes the recommendation to mayor and council to make the change.
Do I hear a motion? We'll have discussion if there's a desire for discussion. Do I hear a motion to approve the proposed amendment to the city code?
So moved.
Okay. And to be clear, that motion is to approve recommending the change to the city code because we don't have the power to amend the city code. Right. And I heard I think Charlton moved. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. Keith, would you? Oh.
Just to clarify, so as it currently stands, it's just vague. It's unclear that because Tier 1 vacation time does actually play into it more. And this one is to clarify that for Tier 2 members, that kind of leave does not factor in at all when it comes to disability eligibility status. Is that correct?
That's accurate, that it's a clarification. We're not changing the rule. The way that the code works, the rule is there, but it's embedded in three different sections and definitions, and this will just pull the actual reference for those different leave credit rules into the disability section itself. Excellent. So it doesn't get missed in the future.
Okay.
Just confirming. All right. Thanks.
Any more questions or discussion? Right. Pete, would you call the vote?
All right. Terry Train.
Aye.
Jim Swanberg.
Aye.
Angela Zamelum.
Aye.
John O'Hare.
Aye.
Charlton Farron.
Aye.
Mark Rubin.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0.
I do want to observe, just hit me and Charlton, don't take this at all the wrong way. Pete, is Dave Samer longer serving than Charlton or shorter serving? If he was here, would he be the last name called before me? it doesn't matter. The point is, I think, Carlton, this is maybe your fourth meeting.
Yes.
And you're the most senior member, aside from John having lengthy prior service, but in terms of current terms, we're a bunch of newbies here other than me and John. Enough about
pressure.
That. Pardon me?
No pressure.
Yeah. All right. Summary of proposed changes to the city code.
All right. So, Mr. Chairman, this is not an action item.
Okay.
This is simply a recap of what has been done by the board and is going to go to mayor and council. And with that last code change that you all approved, or recommendation for code change, that is included in this. I was hoping that you would approve it. So glad we have that in here. You can see this gives a nice discussion of the sections that are being addressed and then some plain language description of what the changes are. If you want the specifics and deep down into the red line of code recommendation changes we have, I can certainly supply that to you at a future date. But I thought the plain language description would be more useful for this setting. Since we're not actually trying to rework any of it, just want to summarize it and encapsulate it because there has been a lot of turnover and I want everybody to be aware that the actions by the board to date are now moving forward to mayor and council.
Mr. Chair, question on this, and it relates to the prior memo as well, but the definition of total and permanent disability, I know the board did a lot of work on that, and those edits that are being recommended to mayor and council, those were viewed prior by the board in past sessions, is that correct? And so the clarification we added is kind of a smaller piece to something that the board's already been working on, but it has yet to reach mayor and council for that kind of definition update. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
The changes summarized in the memo Pete distributed have been worked on by the board, I would say, for 2 years in total, where we've taken them in different pieces, and then that disability piece that you referenced has been visited with the board probably at 4 or 5 different meetings as that progressed.
Excellent. Yeah, I remember hearing mention of it in a prior session before I was a member, and it seemed like that was a focus of the board and before I started. So I just want to make sure that the whole board knew that those changes were being presented to mayor and council now as changes that prior members of the board had ratified, if that makes sense.
Yes. And when mayor and council take action, whatever action that is, we'll feed that back and make sure that the board is up to date on any action that's been taken.
I did have a question for the legislative changes for the automatic distributions. I'm just not familiar with the context of that, like the small amounts of 5,000 to 7,000. Is that something you can bring us up to speed on before it gets to the mayor and council? Is it a minor thing or is it?
You just described it.
Okay.
So, Cassie, would you like to describe it, or I can start, and then you can fix whatever I say?
Go for it.
Okay. So the IRS sends out rules based on what the federal Congress does. And so when Congress made changes, they updated certain types of, hey, what do you do with small amounts of money that have been hanging around? It's not a pension because they're not qualified for a pension, but you've got this money. You need to do something with it. And that limit had been $5,000 for a very long time. So now they have decided in their infinite wisdom that $7,000 is the right number. So we want to be tracking with the federal rules and not off on our own.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the provision that it's been in the code, the tax code for a long time, where it allows the system to force people out if they have a balance of member contributions below this limit, which will be $7,000. But if they're forced out, and it goes to an IRA, so they don't have an instant tax bill and they don't lose that retirement savings element. So if it's under $1,000, so the very smallest amounts, those can be paid out in a check cash distribution taxable. If it's between $1,000 and what will be $7,000, it goes to an IRA that the system sets up for the member, and then the member owns and controls that IRA. If the member contribution refund is over that threshold of $7,000, it must remain in the plan until the employee requests it or the escheat provisions kick in, which would have the system send the money to the state.
Okay. Excellent.
I apologize if I missed anything. I had a dog sitting outside my garage door last night, and I thought I had inherited a new dog. And the call a few minutes ago was the owner telling me he's coming to get his dog. So I'm so sorry. We were on the proposed summary of things, or summary of proposed changes.
Yes.
Okay. Has everything been covered on that topic that anybody has questions or comments about? Okay, sounds like it. All right. So the next item is the proposed action to meet in person. Pete, do you want to bring that to our attention and discuss where we are?
Yes, sir. So this is a proposal by a board member who would like to bring the opportunity to meet in person. So the city code and the way that the city clerk interprets it has the board make a choice once a year and say, this is how we are going to conduct our meetings for the next year. And each year they sign up for, hey, we're going to do it this way. In December, the board voted to have meetings electronically. It's a board decision, so the board can update that at any point. And as you can see, we are fully capable of having a hybrid meeting, which is one of the options available to the board, or the board can choose to have an in-person meeting where everyone comes to a central location and meets actually face-to-face. We typically do this in October for a longer board retreat, but during the other 11 months, we don't generally meet face-to-face. So that's if anyone.
We are not bound by what we decided at the end of last year for the entire 2025 calendar year.
My understanding is that we can update that with the city clerk, as long as we give it to them in writing.
Okay. If we were to decide, and I don't know what the moving board member's desire is, but if the desire was to meet fully in person as opposed to a hybrid, and if we did that, what do we do about public members? Do we still provide for public access electronically, or is that a separate decision?
So in the past, we have not provided any sort of electronic drop-in means for the public. If we have a physical meeting, it's physical access and a minutes. And if we have a recording of the meeting, obviously we would make a recording available, but if we are not recording the meeting, then it's physical access in minutes.
Pre-COVID, did we record? I assume we did not record meetings pre-COVID.
No.
We had audio recordings.
No. Okay. But we didn't have video. Okay. We've adapted to the technology in terms of the recording method.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a nice way to say.
Okay. John, go ahead. You got your hand up.
Okay. That is my item here. And I thought that we could have an optional choice whether to pleasure to have vote or an in person as an option rather than trying to require all of the board members to show up for a specific meeting. I think that would have been extremely hard.
Okay, so you're comfortable with what we're doing today?
To vote on the hybrid system, which is quite common on the boards, I think.
Yes. I will observe for what it's worth. I was on a board for 3.5 years, I think from maybe 2013 to 2016. So this is pre-Zoom Teams, Google Meets, et cetera. And I never showed up for a meeting. I never missed a meeting, and I never showed up for a meeting. I was attending by phone every meeting. And when I got done, I realized that I really had not, it wasn't particularly good mix, but I do find that the Zoom, Teams, Google Meets seems to provide a successful alternative. I gotta get my camera thing worked out, but in the main, being able to see everybody and communicate in this way generally seems to work. But let's have some discussion. Is there anybody who has a problem with the hybrid method? I'm not hearing any. And is there anybody, well, I guess implicit in that question is that nobody feels like we have to require that everybody show up in person. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. And I do think, and I don't think that anybody's suggesting otherwise, I do think we need to have in-person attendance for our retreat. It would be a real challenge to do a full day on Zoom or Teams. Is that your sense, Pete?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So do we need an action item on this, or are we? Okay. I wasn't sure if we're compliant given the fact that effectively what we really have now is we have a few people doing their online together. But let's have a motion to approve the hybrid method so we can let the clerk know. The other advantage to this method is that it does allow members of the public, and particularly those who may not reside in Tucson, to be able to observe what we're doing. And, there may be people who feel like I don't really want anybody else to watch what I'm doing, but the policy is that they have a right to watch. So under those circumstances, I think it's better to make it as available as possible. So,
okay. Mr. Chair, can I mention a discussion item just briefly?
Sure.
I completely agree that towards the hybrid is good. I would say I think that there is a value if members can individually, voluntarily try to prioritize being in person. I think there really is a value of getting to know each other and understand each other's perspectives, and some of those kind of one-on-one discussions before and after board meetings can be beneficial. I know that's not always, easy or practical, and I don't think there should be pressure to do it. But I do want to just say that I think there is a benefit when that does happen.
Point well made. All right, did we get a motion and a second? I don't think so.
So moved.
Okay. And is there a second?
Second.
Thanks, John. This is a motion to approve continuing the hybrid method for the balance of 2025 with the exception of the retreat. Correct?
Fine.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well stated.
All right. Any further discussion?
No.
All right, let's call the vote.
All right. Terry Train.
Aye.
Kim Swanberg.
Aye.
Angel Lozamelum.
Aye.
John O'Hare.
Aye.
Tarleton Ferrin.
Aye.
Mark Rubin.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0.
Very good. Okay. Next item, disability audit results.
Yes. So this one is just reporting back to the board. Each year, when we have approved disability retirements, there is a requirement that the disability requirement, that the disability recipient get a lightweight audit each year. So we send them a questionnaire. Are you still suffering from the same disabling condition? And have you made any earned income during the year? And based on those factors, we report to the board and take any action which may be necessary at that time. During 2025, we got all of our people to respond, which is excellent. Usually there's at least one who doesn't want to talk to us. But Don got everybody and herded the cats, and we got all of our responses, and we have no issues which came up that we need to bring back to the board for your action or consideration. So kudos to Don.
That's great.
Nice.
How many people are included?
I'll let Don answer that.
Fewer than 20 usually.
Thank you.
Very good news. Very good news. All right. The next item, the update on the real estate commitment.
Okay, thank you. So this one, again, is my update based on the direction given by board earlier, which was to withdraw from the J.P. Morgan real estate, both the income and growth and the strategic property fund, and instead make commitments and make investments through two new real estate investors, Harrison Street and the principal. We have made our first commitment to Harrison Street, and the commitment amount is $30 million. As we get more money drawn out of the other J.P. Morgan accounts, we will make further commitments down the road. The second one for the principal, I have just this last week heard back from them about our request for minor adjustments to the commitment letters, and they're totally accepting of it, absolutely fine. But I have not yet gotten all of that signed and made our commitment. I'm expecting to have that done shortly with the help of our chairman, Mr. Rubin, and that commitment will be for $30 million again at this time.
And good news.
Mr. Chair, could I ask Pete a question?
Sure.
Pete, both of them were fine with taking the smaller commitments as funds become available from J.P. Morgan?
Yes.
Okay.
Both of them understood why we were doing it, and they were reasonably accepting of if that's the way it's going to be, then that's what we'll do.
Okay. All right. Great. Good.
I'm going to call this our good news meeting.
Certainly is our news meeting, isn't it?
Item 6, the City Council Climate Action Plan.
All right. If you guys are not yet tired of hearing from me, I'm sure you will be soon. Mayor and Council took action, I think it was about a year and a half ago. and they adopted a climate action plan. The climate action plan is a large document, and it outlines a large number of proposals and action items for the city in total. Within that document is one item, and that one item I have quoted in here, which is to evaluate the investment portfolios for city pension and supplemental retirement benefits and to identify opportunities to divest from fossil fuel companies and environmentally harmful organizations. This is not presented as an action item. The mayor and council have not taken any action to restrict our investments. They have in the past. For example, the mayor and council gave us direction to divest from any company which was involved in the construction of the border wall. So, you know, there are certain things which come up and are sensitive, and they give us legal direction and they bind our legal authority on what we're going to do. And that's not what this is. This is an action plan, and this is a direction to staff to go and evaluate. So I suspect that this will come to the board at some point. So I wanted you all to be aware that this exists.
Okay. What are the mechanics? If the city council tells us that we have to divest ourselves of investments in fossil fuels, it seems like there might be some definitional issues. For example, let's suppose that we are invested in General Motors. General Motors isn't in the business of fossil fuels, but significantly, fossil fuels go into the products that our investment makes, et cetera. But I guess the second question is, do we then advise our managers that they need to not have us invested in any of those entities? And what are the mechanics? How does all this work in the real world?
So, Cassie, correct me anywhere that I step wrong here, but when mayor and council gives direction in a clear and concise way, such as do not invest in any company which has built the border wall, then we work with our investment managers to identify any companies which would be on that list and then give them direction, avoid these companies.
Mm-hmm.
We just went over our investment policy, and I'm sure some of you remember that within that investment policy is a discussion of the difference between active and passive direction. So certain types of passive investments, the collective investment trust cannot be directed by us. We don't actively control it. We are just a small member in a massive investment of the S&P 500. We are passive. So we would then have to determine whether or not it would be appropriate to continue with that if there was some direction which was in conflict, or to find some substantially the most equivalent we could, which continued to meet the objectives. So it would be a process, not a decision, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, if I could, we've talked in the past, although as you pointed out, we have a lot of new faces. We've talked in the past, particularly at retreats, about ESG, which is basically investing for environmental or social or governance goals. And when you are investing money like the system assets on a fiduciary basis, where you're investing for other people, these ESG type policies can be problematic because you can either force investment into options that may not be the best overall option, or you can preclude the investment in options that might be beneficial to the system. So I would encourage the board and Pete, as you hear more from the city, to be open to taking an active role in the discussion with the city on this climate action plan. Because when we talk about the whole category of fossil fuel companies and environmentally harmful organizations, as the chairman indicated, there's a lot of definitional issues there, but that could potentially put significant limits on where system assets could be invested because of what Pete's talking about with mutual funds and you know, mixed investments. So I think that it's important that the board maintain a voice as this moves forward, that the board has to make investment decisions in a different manner than the city does for its own assets. And as a fiduciary investor, we may not want to have too many restrictions. The border wall has been manageable, but something more encompassing like all fossil fuels, and I'm not saying the city will go there, but if it were to go in that direction, that's going to be a lot harder for the managers to accommodate.
One could argue that even with what you described as the city's own funds, the city effectively holds those funds as a fiduciary mm-hmm. for the residents of Pima County, or the city of Tucson, I should say. But that's not our issue. Our issue is what you've noted, and I think it is your words are appreciated, and if and when we have to reach this point, please remind us, because mm-hmm. My general view is that we don't need to pick fights with the city. The city has been extraordinarily generous in furtherance of funding our plan and heading toward full funding. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to pick fights, but we do need to be mindful of, you know, ultimate duties, and particularly in areas that can matter a lot. And mm-hmm. this is one of them. The other thing that occurs to me is that at some point somebody may say, you know what, you're too much bother. You got too much stuff going on here that we have to worry about. Take your money elsewhere. I doubt we get there, but I do worry about somebody who's telling managers you can do this, you can't do that, and do this way and that the other. You know. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention too. The language of the memo says that the plan directs staff to evaluate existing investment portfolios and identify opportunities to divest. So it's mostly saying that we look at what we're doing and we come up with, hey, is there any opportunities here? Are there any options that wouldn't be too detrimental to us that we could still kind of meet the spirit of their political decision, if that makes sense? I don't know what action that would look like from a board standpoint, if it would be requesting from our managers. I'm sure we're not the only organization that has done this, you know, whether or not they have recommendations or kind of standard ways that they've addressed this on certain levels that do not prove disruptive to kind of the means of our investments, but that can help to not just be a symbolic gesture to the what they're asking, but to actually kind of materially show that we're trying to meet the spirit of what they're doing. I don't know if that makes sense.
Why don't we put this on next month's agenda and we can look at it in terms of possible action at that point?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman, if I may. With the city staff is beginning to have a discussion around this area. And so, as I understand it, Angel, please correct me if I'm wrong here, but you and the CFO may, when there is a decision made by the city staff of what steps to take to address this climate action plan, that that would then come to the two of you would come to the board to discuss and make a case and have a discussion about, hey, this is what's going on. Am I?
Yes, you are correct. My concern, and thanks for the opportunity, Pete, Chair. My concern is, as someone indicated, we have to be prudent in how we manage and invest the funds of the system. Our intent, I'm thinking, is to make the keep the system whole, invest in instruments that would lead to a level of profitability that would help us sustain the resources of the system. When I think of fossil fuel, the first thing that comes to mind is if I have an EV car, if I have a Tesla, I need to plug that Tesla into a wall to have the battery charged. And that Tesla, whether we think it is energy efficient because it runs on a battery and we do not have to buy gasoline, it still needs to be plugged into the wall somewhere into a machine that uses electricity that is generated through fossil fuel. So I don't know how deep our evaluation will have to go to meet the directive of the mayor and council. I believe we need to the irony is I'm serving on both sides, but I believe we have to be very careful, and we have to act in such a way to satisfy the directive, however, not while not jeopardizing the profitability of or viability of the system that we are appointed to help maintain.
Mr. Chair, can I comment as well? I completely agree. I think there may be some low-hanging fruit in the sense of, like, you know, maybe there's a company like SpaceX where their rockets are, you know, compared to normal fossil fuels or, you know, egregious or something, right? I'm just throwing something out there. But there may be some low-hanging fruit that could help satisfy that. You know, my background in materials engineering and environmental, you know, it's all so interconnected, right? You could say mining's bad, but you need the copper for electrification, right? And so it's just, I think it's important that we avoid the landmines, but also try to give an honest effort so that we can help proactively shape whatever policy there is. But I think it's important that we don't overstep in the sense of try to change the political decision, because that's really not our function. But to do it in a responsible way as possible.
My words a few minutes ago did not reflect the information that we just got from Angel. So maybe not next month. Let's let the process come to us rather than try to come to the process. This was really a heads up item, I gather, Pete. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So, heads are up. Duly noted. All right. Anything else on this item for now, with the knowledge that it likely will come back to us?
I just have a question. Oh, sorry, Angel. I'll raise my hand as well. You go first.
Mr. Chair, the other concern I have, given the conversation around this topic, is do we ask the city, or do we agree with the city to hire an individual a single consultant to assess the investments of the city's retirement systems, or should this board take action to recommend to the city the selection of a consultant to navigate that process, given the concerns raised in this discussion?
Kim, we'll come back to that issue. Kim?
When I pulled up the plan, I mean, obviously this plan is long-term in nature, but, I mean, there weren't any specific due dates or deadlines or anything that anybody saw, did you? Or did I miss anything?
You did not. There are no specific due dates associated with climate action plan for this item.
Okay, thank you.
However, as I understand it, the city manager is taking action on this and has it on his agenda to have some sort of activity to discuss with mayor and council. And I believe his timeline is FY26. Is that correct, Angel?
Yes, which is this fiscal year.
So that would take us roughly within the next 12 months. All right, let's, before we go further, let's let this come to us a little bit more, if that's okay. I'm anxious about doing things too soon. It's a complicated area. You know, it is very intertwined. You know, at the end of the day, our job is to manage our plan in the most fiscally prudent manner that we can. And I don't want to let the tail wag the dog. My mind is on dogs at this moment, to be very honest. And I don't want the tail wagging the dog. That poor little thing, he kept me up most of the night. So, let's give it a month or two and see what comes. I see lots and lots of potential complications. And Terry, I just saw your message. Thank you. I think that's appropriate. So let's, unless somebody's got something urgent that they need to bring up, is there anything else that, any other agenda items that have popped up on anybody's mind that need to be raised at this point? Pete, you'll let the clerk know about our new and more formal policy for meetings. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
And if anybody does want to show up in person, either check with me or Pete so we can get you information about where you're supposed to go. You know, and I do think Tartan's point is valid. If we can be together more, that's generally a good thing. You catch somebody in the hallway and during the break and the like. So, Cassie, you had a comment?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to speak briefly to Angel's question about the consultant who eventually could evaluate system assets. And I don't have an opinion on whether we would need an individual consultant, but I would want that individual to be performing the review as a fiduciary to the system. So that's the primary difference with the investment manager that the board uses, is that they're a fiduciary to the system. And I think that that would just be my recommendation, that we keep that fiduciary eye on this project.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Kim.
Yes. I just wanted to, you know, being new, the May board meeting was my first meeting, and we didn't have a June meeting, so this leaves July. I was just kind of surprised that there wasn't any market financial investment materials in the items to review. And so I'm assuming that we're doing this review quarterly as a board. And I went back to the rules and policies to see if there are any guidelines there, and I didn't see any. I'm sure there are. I may have missed them, but, you know, in all my past experience, maybe not meeting with the actual advisors and things monthly, I mean, there has usually always been materials to, you know, to review. And so I was just, you know, being new, it was just an observation. Just wanted to bring it up to the board.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. The August meeting is our quarterly review. So it takes longer than a couple of weeks for the knitting together all of the various investment managers' activities and to provide a cogent report to the board. And so that's why it is the second meeting after quarter close where we get quarterly updates. So August contains the June 30 data. September data comes in October. So that's the cycle that we have. And that's when you can expect to see quarterly updates and our investment consultants, Callan, providing a overview of how we're doing, how the market's doing, what the economy looks like. You'll see all of that.
Thank you.
All right. Are we ready for a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Would somebody like to make that motion?
So moved.
So moved.
You know, I would just hit leave and say goodbye to every. Well, I did say goodbye and then leave, but I was told by Pete's predecessor that we have to have a motion, a second discussion, and a vote. So, did we get a? We got a movement. Did we get a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? All right, Pete, would you call the vote, please?
Yes, sir. Terry.
Yes.
Kim.
Hi.
Ajel.
Hi.
John.
Yes.
Charlton.
Hi.
Mark.
Hi. Right, thank you all. We will see you next month. Take care, be safe, and stay out of the heat.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day. Bye.
All right. Well, that was exciting.